episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour, Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer, and they can do everything John Deere. If you need a tractor or mower, implements, you name it, go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call, 226-9226, and just tell them what you're looking for. They'll fix you up. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you go.
Ta-da. Let's see. Who gets free advertising of the week?
Well, I don't know. I guess we should have talked about that. I love it when she does that. Nothing like dead air on the radio.
I like just looking at Bill.
Yeah.
Do it.
No.
Sit.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, we'll work on free advertising of the week. We'll do that next break. We'll wrangle that out. I'm pretty sure I know who it is, though, but I've got to look up their phone number. Otherwise, it's not really free advertising. It's just chit-chat. So we have a fun show today. We actually have people in the studio 2 weeks in a row, which is weird for us and nice. We are also, let's see, next week. So today is November 20th. So on the 27th, we're running an archive because the studio shut down. But it'll be a blast from the past. I think you'll like it. Actually, she was a really interesting lady, and we should have her on again. Be Elaine Willman from Montana. But today in real life, we have Professor Dan Sloan, alias Dr. Daniel Sloan. You could morph those two together. And let's see, he sent me a fun bio. And actually, the bio created questions, more questions than I had, because I only see him, you know, at some meetings and stuff, and I didn't know. Like, I'm really caught in the extreme sport thing. I need to know more. He directs Simpson University's Master of Organizational Leadership program and teaches undergraduate business administration and computer information systems. So I mean, that would keep most people pretty busy. But then he is also a U.S. Department of State specialist with and a Georgetown University fellow, an adjunct professor at Pepperdine University Law School. These are all in different places, Dan. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you're at Simpson University and then at all these different places. His entrepreneurial experience and professional career included decades of business with Fortune 500 companies. Kind of not surprising. That's good. At least you're helping out the private sector because – well, we don't want the government to get all your good work. Mm-hmm. And then in his non-academic life, the one thing I know is that he is on the Republican Central Committee. He represents District 2. But he's also the treasurer on the Good News Mission Board, the rescue mission there. And since I'm the treasurer for the Central Committee, I guess that makes us relatives. Or dum-dums. we're like fellow gluttons for punishment, yes. And he likes to do trekking and extreme sports. Okay, the extreme sports needed like a parenthesis and some detail.
Okay, well, the most recent extreme sport was in Indonesia on a sailboat. It's called a Finnissy sailboat, scuba diving in some incredible water, Komodo Island.
Oh, wow.
Research and a national park. Indonesia has 19,000 islands, and I've lived in that area of the world, so I know it pretty well. Fly into Bali, and then you fly back this way and a couple hundred miles and go to Komodo Island and then get on a sailboat and sail around and see some amazing sea life. I really enjoy skydiving and
trekking
and all kinds of all kinds of really fun stuff. I don't think I ever want to grow old. So,
well, I'm pretty sure with this particular schedule that you've outlined, and that doesn't leave time for any of the other things that I'm sure you're doing, you know, like showering and you know, eating and stuff. But with that kind of list, I'm pretty sure you'll never actually grow old.
Yeah. You've got time.
You're going to outpace it, and with the time travel, around the world, don't you add years to your life or subtract them or however that goes?
Somehow it works out.
Kind of neutralizes.
Oh, that's a different show.
It's enjoyable to keep busy, and it keeps my mind active and besides my body. So,
well, that's great. And so, okay, the deal for today was we don't have a topic, but but Professor Dan's got a million of them. So you can go wherever you like and we'll learn new things.
Well, there's all kinds of really cool stuff that, you know, I've been blessed with an opportunity. Simpson University is my alma mater for my bachelor's degree. I have a bachelor's of arts in psychology and business, dual major. Went on to do some work at Chico State, Golden Gate University, at USC and Harvard. Just had a wide range of academic experiences, and all of those things led to more opportunity, more education that presented opportunities for me. And I've been the kind that if an opportunity came up, if it looked halfway good, I would take it, even though I'm doing something else, which is why I have so much on my plate. So besides...
What's one more thing,
yeah,
right?
One more thing.
You've got like five things. So
who needs to
who
sleep?
Needs six things? Yeah, right.
And so doing a lot of work here in the county. I've had a supply chain and logistics company and marketing. Did business with Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, Philip Morris, Bose Stereo, the lottery. And we actually did a voting booth, ballot supply deliveries for logistics for a long time in Shasta County. Yeah, some really amazing stuff there. City Bank in three different states, California, Nevada, and Oregon. As I was going through my education, I dropped out when I was 23 out of Simpson in Shasta, and then came back when I was 26 after I learned I didn't know very much. So I learned the hard way.
I think that's more common than you think.
Yeah, I know now.
You know now what you didn't know.
I know what I didn't know. So, you know, when you're a small business person, entrepreneur, you wear a lot of hats and you make a lot of mistakes. You don't know everything about regulations, the law, human resource issues, marketing, finance, you know, economics. And you have to know how to do a lot of things. If you don't, then you need to know how to hire the people to do them.
Right.
And to emphasize what you're strong in and hire the people that you can trust to do the things you're not. So I've kind of learned a lot along the way. And a little more than 10 years ago, I had an opportunity at the logistics company. I had an opportunity to move to China, mainland China, Zhengzhou, which is now called iPhone City. It's where about 70% of the iPhones are made. A really interesting place. And today's news, because a lot of the people recently have contracted COVID. So the slowdown in COVID manufacturing occurred when in iPhone manufacturing, when COVID hit their city again. I lived there for about a year and had some really interesting experiences there. It's a very hardcore communist location, I arrived there flying in from Redding, California, had never been to China before, had no expectation of what I would get when I arrived there. And I arrived in the middle of the night, about midnight, and started to come down towards the landing, and there was a lot of fog outside. And so I'm watching, and just suddenly
it wasn't fog.
It was smog. And that was my first real experience with really, really heavy duty, industrial grade smog for various reasons, because it is a heavy manufacturing province, Henan province, and because of the burning of agricultural fields and stuff at the simultaneous, just horrible, horrible smog problems.
So besides iPhones, they make other things in that area as well.
Yeah, they're a large bus manufacturer, both combustion and diesel and combustion engine, as well as a lot of electrical. Shenzhen, China, is where a lot of the electrical vehicles are made as well. But they're kind of made all throughout China.
Right. What's the population of that city?
You know, today it's about 12 to 15 million.
Wow.
And it varies because, and that's not a big city. I've lived in Zhengzhou, Guangzhou, Qingdao, in Wuhan, where the virus was from. So I've lived in those four different cities, and each of them varies in size. Guangzhou is in southern China. It's about an hour and a half from Zhuhai or Hong Kong and Macau. So that's about 25, 30 million. So the cities are very, very large.
Yeah. Compared to like L.A., I mean, what do you, 3 million, is it?
7, 8 million.
Oh, 7 million? Yeah, okay, so it's double.
Yeah. I'm there at Pepperdine in Malibu on occasion. Just about every year I spend the summers there. Pre-COVID. COVID changed a lot of what was happening in education. And generally, I would come back to the States, spend the summer, and then return to a different location or to the same location working with the Department of State. And that's where that side of it comes in. So I went to China originally in Zhengzhou to teach economics at a finance and economics university. Communist government paid for my plane ticket. I went and experienced some amazing things. Got there in, like I said, the middle of the night. Was taken to by a taxi with a guide that met me at the airport. And
there's always a guide.
Yep.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Her name was Grace, her English name. And she took me to a location about 45 minutes away that there was no cars. We showed up and there was just old brick building. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh.
I'm never going back.
What have I done?
The interrogation.
Yeah. So it turned out to be the back of an entry gate. And we went in, and it was an old university building. And my apartment was on the fourth floor. It was an old university dorm building that had two large rooms and a connecting hallway. And I had that for a year. But I remember this so succinctly because it was so different from what I was used to. In Redding, California, or parts of the Bay Area where I lived.
Mostly anywhere else, yeah.
Anywhere else.
Yeah.
And metal bars on the windows, metal door, and everything there is built for people. Because if you have carpet, it'll wear out quick. Just the traffic, 1.4 billion people.
Oh, you mean it's built for volume of people?
Volume. Small people. Yeah. So a lot of small people.
Oh, the shower head that hits you, right in the...
Well, and the shower head was in the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
Along with the toilet.
My bad to assume that there was an actual shower.
Yeah, and it was maybe 5 feet across. So it was a tiny little kitchen between the two rooms.
With a shower in it?
With a shower and a toilet.
So did you cook in the toilet or the shower?
No. I mean, it kind of doubled as several rooms.
Huh.
And it had a hand wash, that you see if you take your shower out of the holder.
Sure.
To wash things around and down. But it was my first experience to a foreign country like that. I've been to many different places in my past. Been to about 50 different countries. But it was my first time to China. Before and since, I've been to a lot of different countries. But
you're like, take me back to my tiny house, huh?
Yeah. So I'm thinking, wow, here I am in the middle of the night, bars on the windows, on the fourth floor, no elevator. China, if it's less than 7 stories, it doesn't have an elevator. Oh, that's generally the policy throughout China.
Better be in good shape.
Yeah.
Well, those 14 stairs at the new house, Bill?
Yeah, that's nothing.
I told you I like extreme sports.
Just living in China.
So there I am, and I have my Chinese translator and guide bringing me in and closes the door, gives me a key, and I can't get out. The lock won't work. And I'm thinking, boy, I hope there's not a fire.
Oh, yeah. Were you supposed to be able to get out? Was that just an actual accident?
I debated that in my mind.
Yeah,
many
I'd
times.
Be.
But that was very interesting.
That
was kind of my
way.
Introduction to communist China, and the next day I was missing my shoes for my luggage, and it's very hard to find size 12 shoes.
In China where everybody's 4 feet tall.
Oh, no kidding! They disappeared out of your luggage.
So it cost me $300.
I wouldn't think size 12 would be big in China.
Not today, but back 10 years ago, China has changed dramatically, which is something we can talk about as well. But at that time, it was very difficult. And you can imagine I didn't speak Mandarin. I finally got out of the room. The person told me how to open the door. The lock was difficult to work. Walked down the street taking pictures so I knew how to get back to where I was.
Yeah.
Found some shoes, $300.
Wow.
Yeah. Got railroaded on that. But
you had them bronzed and you have them mounted on your wall now?
Yeah. And I went to the university, and the university was only maybe 8 miles away. It took 2 hours to get there.
Oh.
And taught my first class in a college class with 150 students, 3 hours, 10 minutes, or it was a 5 minute break at the top of the hour. And they had to run out and run back to use the restroom or facilities. And you could hear, heard a pin drop, just complete silence for that entire 3 hours. Unlike it is in America, you know, where they're constantly getting bombarded.
So, all understood English then?
You know,
if they didn't, they were just really quiet.
There's different levels of English, and there's four different areas because you have listening, speaking, reading, and writing. There's productive and receptive skills.
Right.
So it's difficult when you're immersed into a community, and in China, English is compulsory in the third grade.
Oh.
They have to start learning English in the third grade. Unlike America, where, you know, if we have an, I like to say that some people are bilingual. They know two different languages. Some people are multilingual. They know more than two. And then there's people that know one language, and those are Americans.
And those are Americans, yeah.
So, and unfortunately, you know, we go there, all really good intentions. Many things happen when you're there that you're hoping will occur. But then there's a lot of things that are shocking and controversial that I found.
Oh, I bet. We have to take a really quick break. When we come back, let's start there because that sounds like a good spot to start. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendants. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with funny names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana. Met the man who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. You're caught a harvest moon in Kansas. They'd understand why I got made those flyover states. I bet that mile long.
Straight up, what did you hope to learn about here? If I was someone else, would this all fall apart? Strange, where were you when we started this game? I wish the real world would just stop hassling me.
I should quit hassling me too.
So no, when you got there,
we're here with Professor Dan Sloan. We had somebody wanted to know, who are they talking to? Sorry about that, Professor Dan Sloan, or Dr. Dan Sloan, or Professor Dr. Dan Sloan.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Probably got a middle initial. We need to throw that in there.
W.
There you go. Full resume.
There
boom.
You go.
Okay, so wait. The thing we have to find out is, I didn't want to interrupt your story before, although I want to do that. The Communist Party. How do you accidentally bump into the Communist Party and then accidentally wind up in China in a locked room teaching in front of a silent room?
Yeah. So almost immediately, I was only there for a week or two and had really high interest from the Communist Party and from the people at the university. Cause, you know,
but how'd you meet them here? Like, how'd they find you here?
Well, I was because of the experience of not being able to communicate well in that first class. I began taking courses at University of Southern California, USC, another graduate degree. I have 3.5 graduate degrees. I'm working on a fourth and a doctorate in the Chinese currency. So that kind of gives you background
on
my...
That's tricky.
Yeah. It's financial economics in the renminbi and internationalization of their currency. So part of what I was doing is learning how to teach as a master's of teaching with an emphasis in TESOL, which is teaching English to speakers of other languages, so that I could communicate better and learn how to teach pedagogical and andragogical, all these educational terms, and curriculum design and all that, so that I could better communicate. That's when it came to the attention of both the Communist Party and to the American government. So my ability to communicate well, to teach and design curriculum well, and the fact that I'm an academic and not a diplomat provided the opportunity for me to do things they could not do. You know, I would get calls from the consulate general or embassy ambassador to go to parties, do things that they were not invited to go to.
Really?
Because they'd have to do a lot of legwork and establish things before.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't.
Because they were representatives.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was
easy. We can just get Dr. Dan on the guest list. And
so I ran around
push
China.
Him in there. Yeah. You have a suit?
So I began working with the American government, with the U.S. Department of State. And the Chinese government loved what I was doing as well. It kind of opened a lot of doors. Pretty soon I was teaching 1 to 2 days a week. And traveling the rest, going from province to province to province. I've probably been to almost every province in China.
That's a big place.
A big place. And I saw it during a time when there was a radical transformation.
What was the time period of this?
From 2011 to 2018.
Okay.
A little before that. But, you know, on and off, I was – and then I went to Laos after that, which is just south of China, and spent a year in Vientiane, Laos, with the U.S. Embassy in Vientiane. And my office was actually at the Lao Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So my students were the senior staff of the Lao government, 150 communists with a Putin on my screensaver and communist flags on the desk and green, lime green, you know, uniforms for everybody that was my colleagues there.
No kidding.
So I had a blessing that I was able to learn so much about a different form of government that I could come back and provide to the people that I work with and the students. You know, it's just awesome to have that. I love to learn. Obviously, I've got a lot of different degrees, but I also love to allow people to learn. That's why I'm here today.
Did you ever stumble onto things that you weren't supposed to teach or weren't supposed to?
Yeah,
all the time. Imagine. Yeah.
The proverbial red flag went up.
Yeah, old time out.
Well, you know, Tiananmen Square is one of those.
Yeah.
And what happens when you have a residency permit, you have a your regular passport, and at times I had a diplomatic passport, but normally I would get two passports. You know, you can do that if you show that you have need, and was able to get two. So that if one was taken and that regularly happened, that I would have another so I could get out of there and go somewhere else or do things differently. Wow. But many times when you're signing up for your residency permit in China, you take a test, an online test, and that test is really to make sure that you understand the rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's what you can do.
We don't care if you're going to be a good citizen, because we consider mm-hmm. good citizen somebody who mm-hmm. doesn't color outside the lines.
The do's and don'ts.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So here's all the things you can't do.
Okay.
You
can't prophesize. Just going to ask.
Yeah. You can't go out and overtly use religion. You know, it's an atheist country.
Right.
People think, well, you know, they must be anti-religion or against the whatever particular type of religion or church, and it's really not the issue. Every tyrant is afraid of competition.
Sure.
And that's what they're really afraid of. So they don't want the people to have or become enamored with anything other than the
anything
Communist Party.
Than
yeah,
them.
The government must be the religion, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And then you can't have they don't have the right of assembly like we have here. You know, you can't encourage people to collectively gather or go out and picket or use some form of civil disobedience or anything like that. You just disappear.
Yeah.
And
we've seen that recently with several people that spoke out against the government or spoke out against something they weren't supposed to, and then we don't see them anymore.
Yeah. So Tiananmen Square is something that you don't talk about. You know, if it comes up, I've been to Tibet as well. And there's many, many different things. Again, the communists have moved in there. China's, you know, had a hold on them for many years. But it's a similar type of environment there.
Yeah, well, Tibet's always been kind of an outlier. They kind of done their own thing and stayed away from – or tried to stay away from the Chinese government, but
yeah,
not
you can't
too
anymore.
Successful.
Yeah, there's getting back to China and going to Tibet, if you want. But China is very strict on many of the rules. In fact, it's dissimilar to the United States, where you know what you can't do because the law tells you you can't do it. You know, like, here's the speed limit. You can't drive any faster than this. In China, it's the opposite. You can't do anything unless they tell you.
Oh.
So you're not limited by the government. You're allowed by the government.
But think about what that means.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you do. If you wake up in the morning, you've already violated the law. Because they'll just find something.
Yeah.
You did something you weren't supposed to because we didn't tell you you could.
What a weird way to live.
No, it's not. Well, it's a horrible way to live, but that's...
Okay, how hard was it? Well, you had a minder while you were there, but did they just spend the whole time saying, don't do that, Dan. Don't do that. Nope, not that either. Nope.
Yeah, got to be careful. And I've got lots and lots of examples of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, do tell.
And in Guangzhou, China, I was there for a year. And was teaching at a university as well as doing the couple days a week teaching and then traveling around. They had a large number of journalism students. And this is very interesting, especially right now with what's going on in social media in America. So they have a lot of journalism students. And those journalism students would come up to me and say, we have a project that we'd like to use in writing a paper for your course. You know, each one of them had a different topic, a different project. And so, great, where'd they come from? Well, we're part of the Communist Party. Everybody has to join in order to get their tuition paid as part of their schooling here. And they assign us a project to go out and interview somebody at a factory or at an administrative building or something, and a hospital. So they each one had one, and I said, okay, well, tell me a little bit about it so that I will know how to use that in your coursework. Well, they assign us the factory. They tell us who we need to interview. They give us the questions, and then they give us the answers, and they give us the photographs.
Oh,
a real learning experience.
Yeah. So, what you see isn't really on social media and other things what you'd expect, you know, because it's obviously just contrived.
Yeah, it's totally and, government controlled. And it's
government
only
control.
Only what they want to hear.
Yeah, and then what happens is these same students were telling me, "Well, we're also required to go on social media." In China, you've got WeChat and RenRen, Youku, which is the same as YouTube, but YouTube's blocked. You got Baidu instead of Google. You just have there's no Twitter. If you use a VPN, you can get WhatsApp and some other things. But a lot of it's blocked. Most Western social media is blocked. So what ends up happening is on the big universities where you have a journalism school, they'll unblock some of those social media, American or Western social media, which means Facebook's unblocked, Instagram, Twitter, WhatsApp, all those are unblocked, but only within that university.
Well, that's got to open up all kinds of problems for them, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, because they require those 20,000 university students that are in journalism school to go on, create fake accounts, and produce product that is favorable to the Chinese propaganda, the Communist Party.
Go ahead and say what you want as long as it's about us and it's good.
And so here we are blocking our president and blocking our people from having access, you know, in fake news and all that stuff, when in reality, we've allowed the Communist Party to just drown what we're doing with false information
right.
in bank accounts. And it's just astounding
you
know, that happens. But that's the reality. I've been there. I've lived that. So it's amazing.
I had no idea.
It's got to be really creepy to look at what's going on here with that as a backdrop.
It is, and I teach social media marketing as one of the courses out at Simpson University to undergraduates, and we review things like what's happening with Elon Musk and Twitter. I'm taking it private, and we've got Kanye West with Parler taking it private. We've got President Trump and Truth Social taking it private, and all these things lead to, you know, investigating what that means, you know, what kind of free speech rights will be elevated or eliminated, and how that all works out in the securities exchange or the FCC, not just security, FCC,
sure.
How they might regulate things. Because right now they're regulated as a, as almost like a utility.
Right.
And like you guys. And they have to be careful what's put on their social network, or they might regulate them. And so they're trying to self-regulate. And what that looks like here as opposed to what it looks like in China.
So if you've never been outside of China, your view of the world is as limited as we think it is.
It is very limited because there are algorithms and AI, artificial intelligence. I've had WeChat, which is the equivalent of a Twitter account here, similar to it, except WeChat does many other things, and that's part of the control. You can do everything on it. So it's so convenient. That's what they tell me. Yeah, they know
so
everything about you.
Alarm bells are going off.
Yeah. Oh, no. It was so convenient.
Super.
Yeah. So it does everything, but
with
WeChat, what happens, I speak with people almost regularly every day that are in Beijing, people that are have faith. They want to talk to me about Christianity and other things. But we have to kind of do things differently because when they do communicate, the algorithms will look for – they'll search for keywords and key phrases. Mm-hmm. So when you're having a conversation, the other bubble doesn't show up sometimes. Your bubble going that way is deleted. Their bubble coming your way is deleted.
Oh.
So you have really awkward conversations because you don't know entirely what was said.
What they're really hearing and what they're really saying.
Yeah.
So do you come up with – like substitute words for things?
Yeah. And again, there's language barrier issues, cultural issues. I'm astute enough because of living there that I can pretty much know what they mean.
Sure.
But if you didn't, you probably wouldn't be able to guess what are they talking about. But anyway, it does lead to that kind of environment where you're only getting part of the communication and you have to kind of fill in the blanks or go with some words that are understandable between the parties.
So when they're, you know, regulating or just doing all this stuff with Facebook and all of our different media to keep everyone, you know, from, I don't know, I guess reading something that might make them sad or unhappy or angry or whatever, how reminiscent is that of, like, you've seen the end point of that.
There's all kinds of awkward I'm probably diabolical as well as uncivil issues that come up. If you remember Sandy Hook, the elementary school, I believe there were 20 or 20 some odd children that were shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were six other adults that were also killed on that horrible, horrible situation. That was in December, I think, of 2012. 4 days later, in Zhengzhou, where I was living, I told you about iPhone City, there were 20 children that were murdered and one adult with a knife. But we didn't hear about that in America. It happened at the same time, within days of each other. So to the outside world, they control the media very, very closely. You can find it today on the internet because now it's long enough ago and people have gotten outside of China and posted stories about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time I was thinking, wow, the people in America don't even realize the same, they're just people, and you know, people have mental illness and all kinds of, you know, strange oddities and maladies.
But they make it look like it's only here.
So what?
And China's not big on allowing things to get out that make China look bad. I mean, that's right. Obviously the name of the game.
Tiananmen Square was a really good example early on that they held back what really happened there.
Right.
And you know, over here, all we saw was somebody standing in front of a tank. Nobody really got killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of our people who have come here from China to study and have stayed said that as kids, they were told that the students attacked the military and the military was just defending itself.
Yeah.
And it took
– with a tank.
Like the one gal, it took her like 10 years before she was brave enough to go on – even though she lived here, until she was brave enough to go look it up and then found out what really happened and was like, okay, I think my whole life's been a lie. I mean, that's a big one. That's a really big one, and it was just absolutely somehow they managed to keep everybody from I'm curious, when we come back, we have to take a quick break again, but when we come back, I want to know, like, what's the underground communication like? Are people just scared out of doing that? Or is that a common thing? Because I would think that would make the underground a big thing. Okay, because I'm already planning. I'm going in the underground, apparently, because I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I'm not living like this.
You won't last long.
I don't even live in China, and I want to be in the underground. So we're here with Professor Dan Sloan. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
No more defiance. We just need your compliance. Just give us your compliance. We won't let you feel lost anymore. No more self-reliance.
Well, I guess you could stay in your house, unless you live in China. Then they're spying on you in your house, even under the covers,
the
in the middle
on
of the
really
night.
Really loud when you're talking to somebody.
Yeah, do they do that? In the spy movies where they turn the radio on or go in the bathroom and run the water?
What happened with me? I had explained my initial experience, but after that, I was traveling about 200,000 miles a year. Flying all over the Chinese country, as well as back to the United States, DC, and all over Asia and the world. But when I moved from working independently to working with the Department of State, I was told that I had to leave or had to live in a setting that was different from what I was used to. Not really nice hotel room in various locations. And of course, when I'm traveling, they're very nice. In fact, it depend on who wanted me to come to their location. The Chinese would always try to outdo the American government. So they would pick me up at the airport, not take me to the American hotel. Of course, they're for obvious reasons, but to take me to this really nice hotel.
With the high surveillance.
Yeah, with the high surveillance.
The super high surveillance.
It's actually an echo in the room when you spoke.
Well, they have pillows now that know when you're not asleep anymore. So, yeah. You know, I'm sure that's probably where they came from.
I lived in a hotel room generally either on or near the campus, very nice rooms. And of course, along with a hotel room comes the cleaning of your room every day. Mm-hmm. And my room would get cleaned. I would wait till I went out or I would go out to the store to get a few items down the street, you know, just across the street or something. And I'd be gone for 5 minutes, come back, my room's clean.
It was magic.
It was
wow.
Magic. Yeah, 5 minutes.
And they weren't watching you or anything.
No.
Wow.
So you walked by, you walked in past the lobby and the clerk that's watching you. You have all of the cameras outside and inside the lobby and hallways. I found out that my communist leader counterpart had, in one place, at least I know of it there, had rented an apartment across the street. So they were watching me from across the street. We go into your room, and we found a listening device behind pictures. Your expectation of privacy is zero.
So you mostly just shower with all your clothes on?
Yeah, I mean, in some cities around China, women are encouraged not to to walk around their hotel in the nude because you don't want to have the pictures on the internet. It's to that extreme. And I've walked around the university at night, going from one location to the next. And I always felt very, very safe in China in terms of my personal safety. I couldn't have done what I did. And then I have a strong faith. And that faith has provided me with an opportunity to feel like I have somebody watching and guiding me. And I wouldn't have been there if it weren't for that. And most people have a very difficult time surviving under a really hardcore environment. I'd stand out in China, but I was walking at night and between two buildings, and Behind the barred windows was a group of probably 20 people, students. They were looking at screens and rolling their little mouse around. And what it was is they were scrolling through the video of all the cameras and looking at every single one of them to kind of catch what people were doing. But it's just a really eerie feeling.
Was that their job or?
Yeah, well, that was part of their tuition reimbursement because they had to work, and that was part of what they were doing.
They were part of the spy network.
Yeah, so they do that. And then, you know, don't kill me here, but I work for work with our government. And
we probably won't kill you for that.
the presidents change. And one of the experiences I had was in across from Tiananmen Square is a museum, the People's Museum, which there's a lot of events and the Summer Palace and all that stuff's right there. It's really interesting to see all the ancient history and everything. But I was there with during a high economic summit with John Kerry and Jacob Lew. Gave a presentation there. And observed things, and we had to take apart our badges that we had in order to make sure there's no listening devices in those. So the experiences you get into there are knowing, you know, it's like a lot of corporate CEOs, corporate executives, when they go to China, they'll buy a brand new computer with nothing on it, put only what they need, and then throw it away because you've got viruses in everything.
That's what they tell like congressional staff when they go over there. If they have to go over there for some reason, you take a burner phone with nothing in it, obviously, and you leave it at the airport.
Yeah. So everything is just taken as, and I would normally carry three laptops with me, and I had to do that because invariably at least one or two would break down from all the viruses. So wherever I was going to, if I didn't have a couple computers to fall back on, I would not have anything.
Wow.
Because it's such a big problem to where they're gaining access and disrupting what you're doing.
Wow. You would think that, I mean, most of the time you think, well, they can't be spying on everybody. Who's got that kind of time?
Oh, they do.
But they've got that kind of time.
Well, they got that number of people.
Well, I would imagine, especially foreigners, they're probably watched every instant.
An interesting aspect of that is a lot of people think, well, I'll just get a VPN, virtual private network. And a lot of security people talk about that. But and there's a lot of things we could discuss in terms of economies and the way that things are done different in China. Being communist, all the factors of production are owned by the communist government. Whether they're perceived as being owned by Jack Ma or Alibaba or whoever or Elon Musk, you don't own anything. If Elon is lucky to get out of the country and get on the plane with a suitcase, I consider that lucky. You know,
so all the iPhone factories over there, I mean, they're probably all preloaded with Chinese software or some kind of surveillance software. You think
they are preloaded? But the VPNs, what I was thinking about is because of the way that the communist government holds dear access to 1.4 billion people, which is 21% of the world's population. They have this, and people don't think about that. We're only about four and a quarter percent of the world's population, America. And we have such a massive influence over politics, economics, military, culture. You know, we just...
Hence the need to control us and shut us up.
The U.S. dollar, you know, and it's the trade settlement and reserve currency of the world. And because of that, China has been very critical about allowing inward foreign direct investment into their country. So generally, if you're going to do that, you set up a joint venture. Then you get a Chinese partner, which is required most of the time. They want to own 51%, so they have a controlling interest. You have to give them that, okay? And then if you're a software company, that means they have access.
Oh, yeah.
So your VPN, you're self-identified as somebody who's trying to hide something. and you're paying them, you know, $8 a month for them to spy on you. So you're identifying, over here, look over here. I'm going to pay you.
I would like my own group of people to look at my stuff. Oh. Yeah.
So there's all kinds of interesting problems that happen because of that. And we just invite it. We're willfully gullible when we go there thinking this time it'll be different. And I've seen that happen all too often. Generally, what will happen is the foreign country will go in. I know of an Italian brake manufacturer for Indy cars, really high end. They started producing their brakes in China. They went in under this kind of an ordeal or relationship. And what happens is, just like with Elon, they'll start building a copy of the factory next mm-hmm. door down the street. And then you train all of the people. They get all of your infrastructure, your IP, intellectual property. And then about 3 or 4 or 5 years into the venture, they say, you know what? You guys are doing so great. Why don't we sell you our part, the 51%? And the companies come out and do it. They'll give them $1 billion or $2 billion. And then 6 months later, because they're communist, they can tell their people, if you come to work with an iPhone, you're fired. So suddenly the sales domestically just drop off to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens. And generally, when they get to that point, and hasn't happened yet with iPhones, it hasn't happened yet with Starbucks or Tesla, but it's happened repeated. Google's not there anymore. Netflix isn't there. There's both sides of that are against putting their intellectual property in China because it can be ripped off so easily. So their ethical conduct and legal conduct has a completely different view than what it does from our Western views. Yeah. So,
but I would imagine any of the American companies that go over there and do business are fully aware of that before they set foot in country. They're aware that that's going to happen, aren't they?
And Caterpillar went in through Hong Kong mm-hmm. and invested about $600 million through a Hong Kong joint venture. It only lasted for a little while. They went in to do an audit, and that's another issue. but they went in to do a physical audit and found none of the equipment there. They lost all of their investment.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's just been – and that's what happened to that auto brake producer is they bought back their original 51% that they had given to the Chinese company or partner in order to do business. And then soon all of their business dried up because they just took advantage of it.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you look at what happens with Amazon, another example. In 2011 – when I arrived there, I got my Amazon.cn account. I still have it, Amazon China. And they had 15% of the e-commerce market. Okay, really, I mean, not 1.4 billion people. That's a lot of
business. That's a lot of business.
That's a lot of business.
What?
But by 2019, they had less than 1% and had to leave. They exited the Chinese market.
Because they copied their system. And
Alibaba.
And ripped it all off.
JD.com. Yeah. A whole bunch of – and what happens, I was blessed with having an opportunity to be there and experience how they did it, because it was done in typical Chinese style, in that they copied everything that Amazon did. And Amazon came in and built out all the infrastructure, all the warehousing and the delivery system, accounting systems, logistics, and supply chain, all of that, built it all out. Billions and billions of dollars. They copied all that. And then when I ordered something, I lived on the 11th floor, for example, in Wuhan, I would order something, and originally they would deliver it right to the apartment. They'd bring it up the elevator, knock on your door, here's your package, here's what you ordered.
That's from Amazon.
Yeah, and 6-8 months later.
It was out in the street.
It was out in the street. You have to go down.
Oh, I was kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. It was out in the street. So you go down, there's this big lawn out there, and there's just packages everywhere.
They just whipped it out of the van and drove off, huh?
Well, and then you had to sign for it. But then 6 or 8 months after that, you had to go down the street 2 or 3 miles. Go to a place to get it. And then after that was maybe 5-10 miles away.
Go make it yourself.
Well, then you just stop ordering through Amazon.
Go sell your own clothes.
Yeah.
You had to order through Alibaba or one of the others, JD, a domestic. See what I'm saying?
Oh, so they broke Amazon. This wasn't when it was replaced. This was as they were breaking it down.
Slowly.
And replacing it out.
Yeah. Through non-tariff barriers, they were slowly changing the business for Amazon.
1 minute.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
That's how they do it. That's how they roll.
Because there's not a lot of innovation, but there's just an incredible skill at
they're incredibly
replicating.
Brilliant people, and they are very innovative. That's just a misnomer. But in a communist society, if you share your idea, you shared it with 1.4 billion people.
Right.
So you write a book or you have a patent, it's gone.
It's gone immediately.
You never reinvent the wheel.
So there's very brilliant people. They want to come here.
They are the wheel.
They want to come here.
So that they can
have
ideas.
Have access to intellectual property rights and a strong rule of law.
Wow.
And a judicial system.
And people here think, communism, if we just do it a different way, it'll be great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not good. Something yeah. weird going
well,
on.
Well, we always hear
headphone.
About their, you know, stealing intellectual property. I don't think most people realize the scale that that goes on.
God.
Well, they have probably the largest patent office in the world.
Of course they do.
Everything's made there. If you have an idea and innovation here, you've got to have it made there.
We'll be right back. Yeah. Our guest is Dr. Dan Sloan. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I don't need to see anything.